sound is.
Nick, it's been a while since we talked football, isn't it? I think you've got to go back to the episode of Andy Pascalidis for us to be actually talking Greek soccer.
Wow, right? That far back.
I think so.
Look, it's perfect timing to start talking about soccer again. We just had the Women's World Cup and so forth.
Absolutely, and what a success that was as well. Did you ever expect to have that many people at a Women's World Cup game anywhere in the world, let alone in Australia?
It was unbelievable. Filled out stadiums, you know, Australia did extremely well, and yeah, it's a great event. Unfortunately, we weren't here. We're in the motherland, but
we were,
but we could still hear all the noise from all the way from Greece.
Well, we were watching the games there, and with absolutely great interest. You know, the game against England in particular, and yeah, unbelievable effort. Great job to the girls and everyone involved. But look, no doubt Andy, as we mentioned, you know, is the voice of Australian football. But we're now going to move over to Greek football for the first time and actually take a bit of a deep dive with someone who not only played in Greece but played for Greece. Ready for this one?
Yes, I am, mate.
Okay, here we go. Our guest is a former international goalkeeper who made 12 appearances in goal for Greece between 84 and 89, where he played both friendlies as well as World Cup qualifiers. In the hugely tribal Greek league, he played 95 games for AEK between 1977 and 1996. Fans even gave him the nickname Mr. Protathlima after he helped them win their first title in 10 years. He was also voted as best player in the league by his peers in the Greek media. Mention the name to any AEK fan and you're likely to get far more than just a smile from them, let me tell you, Nick. The best part about this is that he's from right here in the Ouzoutour backyard, believe it or not. So joining us in the distillery is Spiros Oikonomopoulos. Spiro, welcome to Ouzoutour, mate.
Hello, how are
welcome,
you?
Welcome, Spiro.
Thank you.
Now, do you want to translate his nickname to English?
Mr. Protathlima, so Mr. Championship.
Mr. Championship. How's that for a nickname?
It's great, isn't it?
It is pretty good. And for those of you listening thinking he sounds strangely Australian, there's a good reason for that.
Yeah, I was born here in Parramatta.
Yeah, right.
I grew up in Kiama. My parents decided to leave when I was 11 years old. But I always had contact with Australia, my friends, my family, a lot of talks on the phone.
Yeah.
Come and visit back and forth. So I, you know, I kept the accent a bit.
Yeah.
Kiama would have been interesting. So that's, what, 2 hours south of Sydney.
Beautiful.
And we're talking, what, 1970s?
Yes, I was born in 1959. We moved to Kiama in mid-60s, maybe 64, I think.
Wow. There weren't many Greeks around there, were there?
So it was only one more family from Edessa.
Really?
Yeah.
And do you guys have a fish and chip shop down there?
Yeah, or? Classic. What else would Greeks do?
Either that or a milk bar. One of the two.
Well, they're all together, actually. There were three shops in one.
Oh,
there
right.
There was a milk bar, a restaurant, and a fish and chip shop.
Triple
really?
Whammy.
Yeah. Far out.
Back in the day, it was really busy because there was no ring road outside of Kiama. So anybody who would want to travel after Kiama, anywhere, even down to Melbourne, they'd have to pass right outside the shop.
So in
the summer, it was crazy. There were like 15 people working
really?
In that shop.
Wow.
Yeah.
So there you go, Nick. We have a former Greek goalkeeper and AEK player with a very Australian accent and an Australian upbringing. Did you ever expect that?
Mate, we've hit it all.
We have. Well, I have to add to that.
Well, here we go.
The whole soccer thing. I was watching it on TV here in Australia. I was watching the English Premier League, all the league then. But it all started from cricket.
Oh, okay.
Because I never played football here. So
I
only played tennis and cricket. And because I was very good at catching, when I went to school in Greece, and, you know, in the school we started to play football, they asked me, they said, what are you good at? And I said, I'm good at catching. All right, goalkeeper.
Were you the wicket keeper?
Yeah.
Right.
In far cricket. Out. Yeah. I can see how that would have helped.
Yeah. That helped a lot.
Wow.
So you grew up playing cricket.
Yes.
You're a wicket keeper in cricket, which for the people that don't know, is the guy that catches the ball behind the stumps.
Yep.
And then from there, people saw that you were good at catching.
Yeah, and I went over to Greece, and when you go to school, everybody plays football there, soccer.
Yeah.
You know, in
we call it football
in between lessons and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So because I was new and I was the Australaki, the Australian kid, the Aussie kid, they asked me, they said, what are you good at? I said, I'm good at catching because I used to play cricket.
Yeah, that's it.
And I was the non-chubby goalkeeper because all the other boys were chubby because they couldn't run, you know, and they, you're goalkeeper.
Classic. Yeah. Well, that's how goalkeepers were picked in the old days, weren't they?
Especially
the kids that
school,
couldn't
especially
run.
School.
Yeah. School. If you can't run, I'll put him in goalkeeper.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh dear, well look, and also we should mention that we actually share a little bit of a background because all three of us have actually worked for Qantas.
Yes.
There you go.
I'm still working for Qantas as a casual, but
there
still
you go.
Working there.
The last one left.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, great to have you with us. But before we get into the meat of it, Nick, we need to have a drink. What do you reckon?
100%, mate. I'm holding my glass. I'm waiting for you to give me the nod.
Awesome. Let's do it.
Cheers, everybody. Yamas. Welcome, Spiro. Thank you.
Oh, great to have you.
Nice to meet you guys.
Likewise, likewise. Okay, so
I'll throw this to you, Tom.
Yeah, so, I think. So yeah, under normal circumstances, the "What are we drinking?" segment of this podcast is usually managed by Nick.
Okay, but he's done a good job up to now.
Yeah. He has, yeah. But
it's all very nice.
I'm handing the baton over.
Yeah, on this occasion, you probably couldn't tell us much about this one because this drink is actually homemade.
Yeah, I like the bottle. It's got my name on it.
So this comes courtesy of my cousin Nick.
So what are we drinking, Tom?
So I see the Michael Jordan's there too. 23.
Yeah, 23.
So it's a homemade tipuro, so it's highly illegal, just, you know, for any of the...
Don't tell anybody outside of here.
Exactly, yeah, for any law enforcement listening.
It's from Queensland, wink, wink.
That's right. Yeah, so it's a homemade tipuro. So what he does is he actually tries to make wine first, and then whatever's left from that, tries to distill down into this. Out of all the homemade brews that I've had, I've got to say, and this is not pissing in his pocket, this is probably the best one I've had because you can tell that there's honey in it for a start.
Yeah.
But there's also a bunch of other stuff in there that I can't pick and that he hasn't quite told me what's actually in there. But it doesn't seem like it's a homemade job, does it?
No, it seems like a premium quality tipuro, something that the Greek provider would provide for us.
Exactly.
But yeah, no, it is.
It's great.
You got that tipuro taste about it, and you got that nice, I couldn't pick it, but you pointed out it was honey.
Yeah.
The aftertaste. It's a really good drop, Nick. Yeah, we might have to get you on as a sponsor.
Well, he doesn't sell it. He's, it's for personal consumption. But Spiro, unfortunately, he is an Olympiakos fan, a mad Olympiakos fan.
We all have our faults, mate.
So shout Spiro out to you,
spitting
Nick.
It out.
Thanks, no. Nick. Thanks, Nick. Sorry for being Olympiakos, but you're doing okay this year, though, up to now.
Yeah, absolutely.
To be honest.
Absolutely. Well, look, Nick, thank you very much for the drink. We're gonna try and make short work of this bottle. But look, you've given us a little bit of your background, Spiro.
Yes.
Where's your family from in Greece? Tell us a little bit about where...
My family is from the northern part of Peloponnese, close to a city or town called Aegio. Mm. It's from a place called Akrata. That's my father's place. Mm. And my mother is closer to Aegio from a place called Valimitika.
Okay.
So back in the day, they met through sort of arranged wedding and they got to know each other over there.
Okay.
And my father moved over here for, he came first, I don't know if it was 6 months or a year or something, and then my mother moved over as well.
Yep.
And I think they started off in Newcastle, maybe. Mm. I'm not sure. I know that they were there for a while. My father's brother was here before, although he was younger. He came at 12 years old.
Really?
Here in Australia, yeah.
Wow.
So...
Who did he come with? Was he on his own?
Or? On his own.
12-year-old on his own.
Yeah. And he was telling me a story, because he's still alive now, so is my father.
Yeah.
And he was telling me that as soon as he came here, because he said, look, I left, I was like, doing stuff over there, agriculture, that. I didn't really go to school, so even my Greek wasn't that good. Mm. So I came over here, I didn't know a word of English. I went to this family, I started working, washing plates and all that. So I was 12 years old, I started crying. And I sent a letter to my father back in Greece, and I said, I want to come back. And his father said, it was cruel days those days, people were pretty tough and all that. He said, if you get yourself £2,000 at the time, it was pounds then, then you can make your way back. And never happened.
Wow. So, Spiro, what year were you talking about? 1950?
That would be mid-50s.
Mid-50s. Mm, yeah. Wow. So he came in on his own as a 12-year-old, picked up a job cleaning dishes.
Yeah, they had someone arranged here to pick him up and take him. So he was doing dishes and stuff like that.
Wow. And did he ever go back or...?
No, he's here.
Oh, so he's stayed here ever since. Wow.
Yeah.
Of course he lives in Orwood.
It's all that or Marrickville.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a common story, though, isn't it? I mean, my grandfather, we've spoken about previously, came as a 14-year-old in 55.
There you go.
Thankfully, he had his older brother here, but, you know, it's an all-too-common story in this podcast, isn't it?
It is. But we've got, I think, the 12-year-old back in the 1950s was a lot more mature than a 12-year-old now, I'd say, in 2023.
Yeah, but also lost. Don't forget that a 12-year-old these days could be, you know, bilingual. They could speak two languages. Not then.
True. Yeah. But they're a bit more independent, I'd have to say.
Yeah.
Because I just got back from
and
Greece.
And tougher.
Yeah, definitely. Because my mum was telling me stories. She was like 5, 6 years old. She'd herd the goats up on top of this mountain on her own.
My mother used to do that too.
Yeah.
So that's the way they grew up over there.
You know, I couldn't imagine my 17-year-old doing that, let alone the 12-year-old.
That's right.
But they're a lot more mature and older back then, I'd have to say.
And also back then there was no communication. If you wanted to talk to someone, you had to write a letter.
Yep.
Wait for it to go back there for about 20 days. Then they'd have to answer back another 20 days, come over here and pick it up. That would be like a month and a half.
Wow.
And just, you know, scrappy writing.
Were the reasons financial for him coming here?
Usually it's that. And especially those days, don't forget that in the mid-50s was about approximately 10 years after the World War II.
Yep.
So, you know, Greece was destroyed and... everybody would go away. It was either Australia, Germany, or the United States.
Yeah. And we had the Civil War as well up till 1949.
That's right.
Yeah,
we never really had a chance to ever really recover from anything, did we? It was one into the next.
Constantly.
Yeah. So fast forward a little bit, and you're born here, raised here. What was it like for you to grow up in... I mean, it is your country, given that you were born here. But at the time, I'm thinking that you were probably seen as an outsider in a lot of respects.
Yes, that's true. That's true because you would get the classical, typical blondie Australians. Mm-hmm. We were sort of more dark and with funny names, and you'd get a little bit of bullied and all that. But I managed to get through that.
Mm. How did you manage? Because we've heard a lot of stories.
Well, it was just tough.
Yeah.
You know, I just throw punches.
Yeah.
So you had to literally fight.
Wow. Yeah, that's how it was back then.
And you got respect that way.
Until I got bashed up by three because one of the kids brought his bigger brothers and they bashed me up under a bridge in Kiama. I still remember that one.
Yeah.
Really?
But that's the way it was, you know?
Tough times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you were differently looking. Maybe our accent was different too, you know. Yeah. Funny name, Spiro.
Yeah.
Some people call me Spiro, still do.
Yeah,
because it's written with an I.
Yes. So when did you actually go back to Greece?
In 1970.
1970.
And mind you that when we went to Greece, there was still the dictatorship there.
Mm. Yeah,
so there was the dictatorship from the generals from 1967 to 1974.
Ah, right.
So we went over there. I was 11 years old and my brother was 9.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we went to a completely different place, atmosphere, different looking people.
Mm.
I got scared. We all got scared in the beginning, you know, like me, especially me and my brother, because we were younger and all these people were all dark and with beards and they would look, you know. And
you went back to Akrata?
We went straight to Akrata. That's where we stayed. My father wanted to live there. He didn't want to live in the city.
Yeah.
So how old were you then?
11.
11 years old.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wow.
When we went in April, where in June schools finished, so we didn't go to school.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a long holiday for me and my brother. And we would go around all these places and it was a fun time. It was good. Started to learn the Greek language because we didn't know.
Mm.
Being here in Australia, our parents would try to talk Greek to us. We could understand, but we would generally respond in English.
Yeah.
Partly because we didn't, for one reason, because we didn't know how to speak Greek.
Yeah.
And the second reason was because most of the times we were embarrassed, especially in front of other people.
Yeah.
Sure.
We wouldn't want to speak Greek.
Yeah.
Even if we knew a few words.
And you wanted to
assimilate. So you had to try and pick that up over there while you were finding out cousins and friends and all that.
Mm. Wow.
And then the reality hit in September, we had to go to school. So that was a tough one. Yeah. Because what happens is I didn't go in the sixth grade, which was a grade I'd had to, the last class of primary, is it? Primary school?
Yep.
I had to start from the beginning, from class one.
Wow.
Me and my brother.
Wow.
So there were all kids like this, and then we were about a head higher, and then the other kids.
Wow.
So I had to do that for a few months to start jumping from class to class.
Yeah.
And then I reached up to fifth grade,
mm-hmm.
and that's where they stopped me there because at the time in Greece, they would speak formal. The schools were like informal Greek. It wasn't the Greek that we speak every day.
Yes.
And it was tough for me. Because there were words I couldn't understand.
What's informal? Is it a local dialect?
I'll give you an idea. It's not a local dialect. I'll give you an idea. Like psomi, which is bread, in formal Greek is artos, which you can hear it in the church as well. I would hear artos and I'd say, what's that, to my mother? And she said, psomi. Yeah. And I said, why don't they call it psomi so I can understand it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So all this was really hard for me and my brother. Mm. And then at the time when you would finish primary school, you had to do tests and exams to pass to go into high school. So I wasn't ready for that. And obviously I went up to the fifth grade and they said, no, you'll do the whole
thing again.
Yeah, a year back from where you should be.
Yeah.
And then it'll be better for you.
Mm. Yeah. Wow. Is this the period where you got into soccer? Well, tell us about how you became a fan of football.
Well, from school, first of all, and then after school because there was no...
Was it in Australia or was it in Greece?
No, that was in Greece.
So Australia
no
cricket,
soccer at all.
Cricket,
tennis, and watching soccer, the English soccer from TV.
Okay.
There was Star Soccer then. There was a program.
So you had an interest.
Yeah, yeah. I liked it. Yeah, and I used to draw a lot.
Okay.
And I used to draw soccer games with players and all that.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Who was your team?
Well, Manchester United.
Okay.
Sorry, if you guys are Liverpool.
No. Oh, my son.
I am.
So I'm Liverpool, but my son's probably doing cartwheels upstairs.
Okay, have you heard it?
Oh, he's got a massive...
Come down, son.
Yeah, he's mad.
Anyway, Manchester United. And when I went to Greece, right... there was this goalkeeper who used to play, he's older than I am, he's probably mid-70s now. He used to play for Panathinaikos, and his surname is Economopoulos. He's considered one of the best goalkeepers ever in Greece, right? So when I went there at the age of 11 and I started watching football over there, I heard the name straight away and how kids are, I'm going to be like him.
Mm.
We had the same name as well.
Sure.
So
not related in any way?
No. So I became a Panathinaikos fan.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's really funny because when I was going to school and I was playing and I was really good at it, I started to become really good as I was playing. I had this school mate that we used to go to school together. He was an AEK fan.
Mm-hmm.
Now, back in the day, it was majority Olympiakos Panathinaikos and a few AEK.
Yep.
You know? And he was like, they used to stand out. And as I was playing one day, I was playing this game and I was really good. I don't know how, but he turned around to me and says, you know what? I think that one day you're going to play for AEK. I don't know how he said that.
Wow.
I still remember it. It's still ringing in my head.
And how old? How old were you at this time?
13.
13.
Wow.
14.
So you just started playing. So you got picked as goalkeeper because you could catch.
Yeah, and then I started at 13 years old. I started playing for the local team.
As goalkeeper?
A goalkeeper, and I was a reserve. Like the first goalkeeper was like 28 years old or something, and the reserve goalkeeper was 13.
You're kidding.
Or 14. I was really good.
Did you have a bit of height back then?
I actually grew my height after 14 years old. So around 14 to 15, one summer I just, grew.
Yeah, because you're about 6 foot
I wasn't
two.
Really tall in the beginning. Yeah. Okay. But I was really agile and fast.
Wow. So you're 13 and you're reserve goalkeeper for the...
For the club.
Which club was it?
Akrata. Yeah.
Wow. Unbelievable.
The big guys were playing. They're like 30-year-old, 32, 28, 25, 26.
So they saw you in the schoolyard. This kid's good. Did you play... What was your first game? Tell us about your first game that you played.
Look, I played a few friendlies when I was reserve, but what really happened... was in...
Did you have an age group? Were you playing for 13s or something?
No, there at the town, it was just everybody all together.
Okay.
And even when I went to AEK, it was kind of like those days, there was like the SAP, the really young kids.
Yeah. Yep.
Then you would have a group which were the teens, which would be anywhere between 15 and 17 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would have not exactly the reserve team, but it was like a second team of the professionals, where you were still amateur.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the good players would become semi-professional, and then there was a professional team, and that was it.
Wow.
There was no such thing like today where you have all these different age groups and you sort of move on and all that. Not then.
Wow. So you're 13 and you're...
Quick pathway.
Yeah. And you're reserve.
So what happened, I was lucky because at my hometown, one of the people that were high ranked in the committee of AEK was married to a lady from Akrata. So the word started going out. Akrata was also sponsored by AEK. So our first, in 19, I don't remember when it was, but when we started actually participating in the league, which had teams from Air Yopatra and all those areas, we were sponsored by AEK. So our official uniform was yellow and black.
All right.
Yeah. Now it's different anyway. So the word went around, and he brought down my later mentor, Stelios Serafidis, who was one of the legends goalkeepers of AEK, and he was a coach at the time.
Right.
So they brought him down, and in 1976, 77, they took me to AEK. So we moved to Athens with my mother. My parents had separated at the time.
Right.
And we moved to Athens with my mother. And I started training for AEK, for the amateurs and young team.
Yeah.
And then on the weekend, I travelled to Akrata to play.
Wow.
So I was the first choice goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Okay. I'd play. I was like 17 years old then. Mm. Yeah. 16, 17 years old.
So how old were you when you made the move to Athens?
About 16, 17, 1970.
Wow. So you landed as an 11-year-old. Yeah. 13-year-old, you're reserve for Akrata.
Yeah.
And then by you impressed everyone in that area. Yeah. So the next 3 years, you're in Athens with AEK. Wow. Yeah.
And I was playing for Akrata. So I remember then I'd go to school, and then school was even on Saturday. Mm-hmm. In Greece.
Right, okay.
And unfortunately, there were weeks where I was afternoon. So I'd finish Saturday afternoon around 6, 6.30 in the afternoon. I'd have to leave straight away, take a taxi, go down to the buses, take a two-hour drive down to Akrata with the bus, end up I don't know what time, and then go to bed and prepare the next day to go play a game with the team. And come back because Monday morning, I'd turn mornings. Monday morning, I had to go to school again.
Wow.
And in between, I had 2 to 3 training sessions a week for AEK, and I had to move quite a distance from where I used to. So I had to take 2 buses and a train and walk a couple of kilometres to go for training and come back.
So where in Athens did you live? Because I'm assuming...
Well, that's in, I used to live in Zografou.
Okay.
So then, as you can imagine, Zografou is one area in one place, and now Philadelphia is in the other side.
I was going to say, now Philadelphia, I'm guessing, so is where you used to
take
train.
Buses, I had to walk, I had to take the train and then walk again.
I mean, it takes commitment. And at that age, what was that like for you? Was it a bit of a culture shock to say, I'm almost a semi-professional or a professional footballer now?
You feel like an alien, first of all, because I was still going to school.
Yeah.
I hadn't finished high school yet. Mm. I was in the 5th grade of high school.
Yeah.
That's what it was called at the time. Yeah. Now, if you tell me year 17 or whatever, I don't even know what you're talking about. So it was year 5 in high school.
Yep.
So I remember because we had a certain amount of sickies we could take from school to be justified so you could not miss the term. I remember my friends, as soon as the weather started being really good in April, they used to take the sickie to go to swimming or play pool, and I would take a sickie every week to go and do an extra training session.
Yeah, right.
So I felt like an alien because all my friends were associating together, trying to find girls, you know, all the good times, and I was like, you know, you have to go there.
Yeah, wow.
So I had a commitment, although I never knew if I could become something or not. It just, that's the way I was from a kid.
Wow.
Always. My mother used to tell me, she said, any time you would prepare to go to play a cricket game away from Kiama, where I had a suitcase with all my stuff, I never fixed anything for you. Mm. You would open the suitcase and put your socks and put your uniform and everything, close it, take it with you, bring it back.
Mm.
I don't know. That was probably my character, being disciplined from a young kid.
Mm.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
So you're about 17 now.
Yeah.
You're going to AEK. Obviously, you were impressing there. People were...
Mind you that the first time I saw a pitch with grass was then.
Oh, really?
because where you used to play in the towns, it was all gravel.
Yeah, yeah.
And your training sessions were there too.
Yeah.
Mind you, there was no actual goalkeeper kits, especially for pads, for elbows or knees or hips or whatever. We just had a cheap pair of gloves and that was it. And so you had to dive.
Wow. So you being on a grass pitch would have been like being at the
Hilton. First of all, when I walked and saw it, I thought, well, this is probably painted or something. It looked like a painting.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So I thought, what a luxury to have.
That's right.
Yeah. So you grew up in a country town in Kiama. Went to Akrata, which is a small country town again.
And like Kiama, because it's almost the same distance from Athens, from Sydney.
Really?
Almost the same distance, maybe 30 kilometres further.
Yeah.
And it was on the beach.
Yeah, wow.
Akrata was on the beach too.
And then you move into a big city like Athens.
Yeah.
So that would have been an eye-opener for you alone.
Yes, because we went to school again. There was that thing, you don't know anybody, you know, and I don't know how the kids could tell, but you look like you come from the countryside, all right? Then for the first time in my life, I went to an all-boys school, used to being from Australia and Akrata into a mixed school,
yep.
So no girls, it was just guys. It was tough too.
Okay, so from there, was it 1977 you had your first game for AIC?
I started playing league? in the youth.
In the youth, yeah.
The teens sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
We won the championship in the south and we beat Pauk, who won the championship in the north.
Mm-hmm.
We beat them. We played in Trikala. I remember that game.
Wow.
And we beat them and we won the whole thing. Now, mind you, my first game, right?
Yep.
Now, when I used to play in Akrata, it was about 100, 200 people, something like that. Right. Now, my first game with AIC in the teens was against Olympiakos in Karaiskaki. And we used to play just before the big game.
Really?
All right. So I walked into the pitch. There was about 5,000 people at the time. Second half when we had the break and we walked in, it was packed. 40,000 people.
Really?
40,000. Because then there was no like live on TV or whatever. And they used to follow. They used to like watching the young kids as well because talents would pop out. It wasn't these times where you get all these Africans and everybody's a European. Then it was Greek.
Yeah.
And all the clubs in Europe had only two foreigners. You know what I mean? So it was all Greek.
Yeah.
And that's why people were really interested in watching the young players play too, to find out the new talents and whatever. So I walked in second half literally with 40,000 people. And they're all against us, you know.
Tell us about the abuse. Had you ever heard anything like that?
Did you cop abuse at that young age?
Oh, yeah, of course.
At that young age?
Yeah.
So you were like 16?
Yeah, because I was playing exactly behind the whole stand of Olympiakos, the second half.
A lot of questions on that.
Oh, yeah. Forget about it.
Or maybe we can start now.
But you know, that winds you up, though.
Yeah.
The bad part is when you're playing bad and you hear, you know, from your own.
Yeah, okay.
When you hear that, it really brings you down.
Yeah.
But so, when you hear it from the other ones and you know that, oh, you know what, if they're swearing at me, I'm good.
Yeah.
Or we're good, the whole team.
That motivated you.
Of course.
So if they weren't swearing at you, you'd get...
Oh, there was no way. We're Greeks, mate. You know that.
Yeah.
Some of the greatest sledges I've ever heard in my life were at a Greek soccer game.
Yeah.
At a power game, actually.
Really?
It's next level there. It's unbelievable.
Well, maybe Spiller.
They're very creative as well. You know, the most creative fans that used to come up with all these chants with swear words and all that was the Panionio.
Right.
And the guys that were the guys that were standing at the down at the ground level.
Yep.
There was the barriers?
The netting.
Yeah. They would stand behind that. They would walk around. They would swear at the guys upstairs and they would swear at the guys in the soccer players.
Can you give us some examples of what...
I don't know. We
can always edit it if it's too bad.
We don't usually edit that stuff out. Does anything come to mind? Or?
Oh, there's a lot. There's a lot.
Talk about your mother and all that sort of stuff.
Oh, a lot.
Fair enough.
Your team would score a goal towards the end and, you know, all the whole ground would start saying, Ketora borite na pana gamifite, and all that.
Classic.
I'm saying it in Greek. So, you know, stuff like that. It's hilarious, actually. If you're in the stand and you're listening...
Yeah, it's great value.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
That's why people go to the games. That's entertaining. Right. You don't see that on TV.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And there was not much violence then when I was growing up as a soccer player.
Yeah, really?
Oh. Yeah. I'll give you an example of how creative they are. Right. I used to have friends, singers. Now, you've heard of Yanis Parios, right?
Of course.
Yeah. Now, we used to be friends with Pario.
Okay.
So he would tell me that he was invited once. Yanis Parios is one of the really high top members of Panathinaikos.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He's a Panathinaikos. Mm-hmm. So he told me he was invited to go and see a game, Olympiakos Panathinaikos, Sto Karaiskaki.
Yep.
So he says, I go with my car and I go into the VIP section to park my car. And then there's fans from Olympiakos, they see me. But apparently the people that were supposed to come and pick him from the parking to take him in were a bit late.
Mm.
So he gets out of the car and there's all these people now that's surrounding him. And they know he's Panathinaikos, right?
Yeah.
So he goes to me. I thought they were going to like attack me or whatever. So suddenly they all started singing together.
Yeah.
Da la ras, da la ras. You know what I mean?
Wow.
The other big singer.
Wow.
You know? Like so just to get to him.
Just
know
to rile
I mean?
Him up.
So that's creative. That's a nice, I like that kind of, you know,
it's
rivalry.
Witty. It's very witty.
Yeah. But you these know. Days it's like.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
With a knife.
Which we saw recently, unfortunately.
I think that's a global phenomenon. It has to do with the suppression that people have, especially lower class people. Then you get all these people that are extremists or fundamental fanatics or whatever you want to call them, and they just mingle themselves into to clubs like fan clubs because there's an anonymous there, you know. Yeah. So I'm anonymous. I create whatever I create because I'm against the system or the government or whatever you want to call it, and I just find a place to hide. And that's how it usually happens. Or you get extremists, you get Nazis, you get a lot of people in there.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about Greece now. I'm talking about generally.
Yeah, in general. It's a global thing.
Yeah, and it's a global thing. And unfortunately, I think that only England has done the best.
Oh, really?
And it took a lady to do it, Thatcher. You remember that?
Mm.
Okay. I remember the game Liverpool against Juventus when it all started at Hazel in Belgium when people were killed.
Yep.
Then the English teams got banned from, I think they got 2 or 3 years from UEFA, and then Thatcher said no, 7 years.
Mm.
And you know how much money that cost all the clubs and all that. But she didn't care. She said, this is the way we're going to fix it.
Yeah.
And then they implemented the video cameras and the laws that said if you get caught in any game anywhere, you're not allowed to go in any other game again.
Yeah,
for life. So imagine if you love soccer or football, and you get banned, and you can't go and see even a local game.
Yeah,
you know, well, but that's what it takes.
It's a great deterrent.
Yeah, it is. That's what it takes.
Well, it's the lifeblood of these communities. The football. That's where they live and breathe.
That's
so
right.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Look, I must admit, we felt quite safe. We went to a Man United and Everton game with my son, and I wasn't sure. Like, I've seen stuff on YouTube, and I start to get a bit nervous. I got my 13-year-old son with me, and I said to him, look, maybe don't wear your United gear. Okay, I don't know what we're in for here. I've seen a lot of things on YouTube. But look, he wanted to wear it, and I thought, you know what, fuck it, just wear it. And it was a home game, and nothing happened. It was all good. It was all amicable.
Usually nothing happens. First of all, because of the way, as I said, that things are over there with the law.
Yeah.
It's very strict.
Well, they segregated the opposition
people.
Well,
that's what you do.
Yeah.
See, all that with what I mentioned with Liverpool and Juventus then started and happened because the Belgians sold to both teams in the same area.
Yeah.
There was no barriers, there was nothing.
Yeah.
And that's how it all started. Liverpool fans attacked the Juventus, they tried to jump over, then they got crushed, and that's how it all started. Yeah. And I was surprised the game went ahead.
Yeah.
The game did go ahead.
Yeah, wow.
And Juventus won that game with a penalty that was given to them. It was about a metre outside the box.
Mm. Oh, really?
He was tackled a metre outside the box, and the referee went penalty.
Penalty.
And Juventus beat Liverpool 1-0.
And then that was
I remember that. I was supporting Liverpool because I liked English soccer. At the time, I wasn't aware of the rivalry. I never knew there was rivalry between Manchester United and Liverpool.
Yeah.
Because when you're in Greece at that time, there's no information.
Yeah.
So I never knew about all this. I found out later when I was much older.
Sure.
Yeah. Wow.
What was your first thought when you heard about that, you know, that young kid that was murdered essentially earlier this year between, you know, the Ajax fan when Dynamo Zagreb was there?
It started, first of all, much earlier, there were other fans. Like in Thessaloniki, there was this guy, a young kid, who was sitting at a coffee shop having his coffee, and two, three blokes approached him and said, what team are you? Or they saw the fanella, they were Pauk, and they stabbed him. So this has been going on. It's not just with Mihaly. I don't know. I was really surprised because these people were a convoy of I don't know how many cars. And they left from Zagreb to come to Greece.
And someone knew about it. Like,
everybody
knew about it. The police
knew about it. And apparently the rumour is that they have been escorted and been familiarised with the area from a couple of Panathinaikos fans.
Right.
Yeah, that's the rumour. And in the videos you can see it as well. Because when they're attacking people, you can hear someone who can speak
Greek
swearing. Look, as I said, I'm not saying that, you know, Ajax are saints. In every club, there's
an element of it.
Yeah. There's an element of it. And unfortunately, that's sad. You know?
When it comes to targeting someone with a knife to stab them.
I don't know, mate. I don't know if they're on drugs or something. I can't pick up. I'm afraid to pick up a knife and pick something to eat.
Yeah.
Let alone start chasing someone with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we were in Greece when that happened. And I mean, the mood changed completely in the country when all of this happened. And the return game.
You feel unprotected.
Yes.
All right. That's the word. Yeah.
So what was the aftermath with all that? Did they end up arresting anyone?
They have arrested people. Some Greeks, some are from Croatia. And
they've arrested Greeks.
Yes, as well.
Oh, wow.
But only a couple. And the majority is people from up there.
Okay.
So there's a court. There's an ongoing thing now. I don't know what's going to happen.
And were the police reprimanded in any way?
I don't know how to say it, but it's a funny thing because they had seen them. They knew because they were on social media, these guys.
Yeah. So right. They weren't hiding.
So from Zagreb to Athens is like, I don't know, 1,000-something kilometres.
Yeah.
So they knew about it. And the funny thing is they didn't stop them at the last toll road before Athens and tell them, look, we know you're here.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to be here. So if you come here just to have a look at Athens, we'll be monitoring you. Don't go anywhere near that area. But nobody told them anything because they have sort of like a brotherhood.
Yeah.
Panathinaikos and like we, like AEK had with Marseille in France. Right. They have a brotherhood.
Really?
You know what I mean?
A connection somehow.
Yeah, connection.
Turning to more, you know, positive stuff. I mean, we talk about that tribalism in Greek football. You mentioned earlier that, you know, you had a soft spot for Panathinaikos growing up.
Yeah, because it just happened that player had my surname and I was a kid.
Yeah.
So, you know.
So how did it feel for you, given that tribalism, to then go to AEK? Were there any mixed feelings for you?
No, there was no mixed feelings at all because I knew the person who took me there.
Yeah.
Because I told you he was married to a lady down in Nakarata. So I knew him. I'd met him. Mm-hmm. I knew who he was. And then, you know, I went to a big club.
I mean, it's become a bit of a love affair for you now,
hasn't
it?
And the funny part is about it, that when I became professional, I started playing for AEK. Mm. The media, some big reporter from AEK, had organised a meeting for me and that other Economopolo, who was still active at the time, to meet and talk. So for me, suddenly to see someone that I used to watch on TV and played in cards that you buy from the Periptero, you know, just meet him and sort of be on the same level with him.
Yeah.
For me, it was
euphoric.
Unbelievable.
Wow. Yeah. So tell us about your first game for AEK now.
At the time, the coach had changed. There was an Austrian coach who was coaching the team, and he could see how hard I was working at training sessions. Mm-hmm. So I used to go there an hour before, and I'd start training while the others were in the dressing room.
Really?
And then I'd do all the whole training, and then after I'd do special training with the coach and with the goalkeeper coach, just the three of us, for another hour. And I remember that the guy who was responsible, the two guys that were responsible inside for the dressing room and the, you know, to wash the clothes and all that, would come out because it'd start getting dark and he'd start shouting and say, I want to go home. Come on, finish. I want to wash the clothes and go.
Really?
And that used to happen every day. Mm. So at some stage, because there was like a little injury with one goalkeeper or the other goalkeeper was not playing that well.
Were you second or third in line?
I was third in line.
Third in line.
I was third in line because the first goalkeeper was around 30 years old. Mm-hmm. And the second goalkeeper was like 27 or 28. Mm-hmm. So I was 19 at the time.
19.
All right. That coach, from what I read after and what I heard, had considered to start me. Mm. But he was afraid. He was afraid because the team was not playing that well. And he thought that, look, if I play that kid and he doesn't play well, they're all going to, apart from attacking him, they're all going to attack the kid as well. Mm. And he might, you know, it might be bad for his beginning of his career. Mm. So he sort of let it go.
Try to protect
and
you.
And then he got sacked. And then a Greek, one of the Greek old players from AEK, Papapostolou Miltos, who was after had become the Greek national coach, he came in. And he saw that too. And when he was asked, he actually said these words. He said that the amount of training that Spiro does, or the whole bunch, the rest of, do the same. So all the others do one Spiro training.
Really?
He actually said that. And he played me in the first game we played in now Philadelphia at home against Apollona. We beat them 2-1.
That was your first game?
That was my first game.
So tell us right at the beginning. So when did you get the first tap on the shoulder and say, hey, listen, you'll start?
Oh, on Friday.
Did you start or were you coming off the bench?
No, start.
So the coach comes in. Did he call you into his office?
Yeah, he called me into his office and he said, look,
Did you get a bit nervous? How were you feeling?
Of course.
Thinking, fuck, what have I done?
Of course, yeah. But look, he stood behind me from the beginning. He said, look, I know that you're young and you're inexperienced. There's nothing you should fear about. You're very well trained. You play against the other players like Thoma Mavro, Bajevic and all that. So he said, look, you're ready. And you don't have to worry about anything. Anything that happens, you're not responsible, I'm responsible. Mm. So that's what he told me.
Wow.
And so you have nothing to fear.
Yeah. So I told you on Friday, when
you're
was the game?
Sunday.
Sunday.
Yeah.
And how did you feel?
So then
the
Saturday we went to the... Well, look.
Were you shitting yourself?
Yeah,
were you?
Of course. It was concerns, you know what I mean? Because this is the real deal now.
Did you sleep?
And I was like 20 years old. No, I did sleep.
Yeah. Okay.
So I played that game, and funny enough or not, the next game was against Olympiacos.
Yeah.
And we were playing...
So what were the sheds like? You come in, you're at your home ground, you're about to start your first game.
Yeah.
What was it like walking out? Could you hear the crowd?
Oh,
could
yeah,
you smell the fleas
course,
in
yeah,
the air?
Of course, of course. Yeah, it was really like, really, now that, you know, you walk in and you say to yourself, well, this is reality, you know.
Yeah.
You've got to show up and play well. And I did play well.
What were your teammates? Were they slapping on the back, wishing
yeah,
you luck?
Yeah, they were all encouraging. And they told me, everybody, yeah. especially in the defence, they said, Spiro, whatever you want, you know, goal kicks, we'll do it. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
And all that stuff, you know, feel free.
Yeah.
If you want to go out for a cross, just call it and one of us will run behind. And if you miss it, we're behind. Don't worry.
Yeah.
Fantastic. So, you know, they were all very encouraging because, yeah. mind you, at the time, goalkeepers at that age would not play for big clubs.
Mm.
You know, Panathinaikos had at the time Kostadinu, who was 30 years old.
Mm. Yeah.
PAOK had a Yugoslavian, Fortula. Mm. He was about 30 years old too. Olympiakos was Arvanitis.
Yeah.
Mm. And then Sarganis as well. All these goalkeepers were over 26 years old.
Yeah. So they were like the
and
elder
they were very
statesmen.
Very experienced.
Mm. Yeah.
So I was 20.
Yeah.
No experience at all. The previous club was Akrata.
Yeah.
You know, on the gravel.
Yeah.
You know
so
what I mean?
Is soccer, again, me and Tom have played rugby league, and we always say to get rid of your nerves, you've got to get your hands on the ball early or make a tackle early.
It helps a lot. For a goalkeeper who's going to be judged probably by once in the game.
Yeah,
because you never know.
Yeah,
you know, and it could happen the 80th minute.
It's
you
just
have
moments.
To be warm and ready.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
So you come on, the whistle goes.
Yeah,
and how were you feeling?
Well, I was okay because I was playing on the side where the fanatics are.
Yeah,
of AEK, and they were
cheering you on
and all that, and you could hear occasionally people.
Do you ever look back at them?
Spirara, you know, yeah, of course. You know, don't worry, Mr. Mastador, you know, stuff like that. You could hear that.
Wow.
Yeah, individually.
And how did the game end?
We beat them 2-1.
2-1.
And then the next game
did
now.
Did you do any good saves in
yeah,
that game?
Yeah, a couple of good saves too.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't my fault for the goal.
How was the goal?
Oh, it was from a close range there.
Okay. So. Tapped it in.
So anyway, yeah. So now the thing is that next week we were playing against Olympiacos.
Yeah.
All right? And we were playing, Olympiacos was punished.
Mm.
And we had to play in Chalkida,
yeah.
which is like, I don't know, 70 kilometres away from Athens, something like that. We were playing there.
We're just topping up.
And, you know, nobody had...
Yeah.
Nobody knew who was going to play goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I played against Apollona mm-hmm. at home.
Yeah.
But now you're playing against Olympiacos, mm-hmm. right? So I found out on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And actually there was talks about it with the coach because, the you know, how presidents were there. They would talk with the coaches asking who's going to play and all that. And he told him that I'm thinking of playing Spiro again. And the president was really worried. And he said, well, he's a young kid, you know. We're playing against Olympiacos. It's not the same game as the previous one.
Was it a home game?
No, it was away at Chalkida.
Ah, Chalkida.
But it was because it was Olympiacos, they were punished for some reason.
Got it. Yeah.
Anyway, so the majority of fans were Olympiacos. At that game, I had a couple of friends from Akrata that were Olympiacos. And they found tickets and they took my father as well.
Oh, really?
So my father was sitting right in the middle of Olympiacos fans and he had to shut up. And I was playing well that game. We ended up drawing 0-0.
Olympiacos?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
So, and I played well that game.
And were
too.
They the gun team at the time? Were they winning the league?
They were winning the league then, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, we were like third or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I played well there. And then from then on, I played for a while. And then unfortunately, I went to the army.
Yeah. Mm. What was the away crowd like? In that
they were
second
loud.
Game. What were they? You remember anything they were saying to you?
Oh, not really. They were cheering mostly against Olympiacos, but I remember some of them saying, like when I would go and get the ball from close to Andrea Guri, because I was like tall and thin.
Wow.
I was not really built yet. I was
cucumber.
20 years old. Yeah, like, and that's the expression you use in Greek.
Andrea
Guri.
Wow.
Yeah, you know.
Classic.
And then my father, you know,
so they
don't
throw
swearing
stuff at you, do they?
No,
they don't throw.
No, there was not much of that.
Okay.
Not really.
Mm.
No, it was just verbal.
Yeah, so nil-all, that would have been massive. And your dad would have been proud in the crowd.
Oh, yeah, of course, but he couldn't talk.
Yeah, he couldn't say anything.
I said, pretend that you're mute or something. You know, you can't hear. You know,
and did you do any big saves?
You're
going
to hear a lot. So.
And he did some big saves?
Yeah, I did a couple of big saves.
Wow, so you saved the team. And, and what was it like in the change room afterwards? Were they all...
Oh, yeah. And you know, I could see because I don't know how this was because this was just a place that there's... Khalkida used to play, which was like a third division team.
Oh, right. Okay.
So wasn't both dressing rooms were close to each other.
Yeah.
And then... all the toilets and the showers were common.
Common.
So when we went to have a shower after the game, I was with the Libyaco players as well.
Oh, really?
And I could see some of the players like really looking at me and even before in the game as well.
Where were they looking?
Some of the attackers like, no, they were looking.
So he's Greek, but he's not that Greek, he says.
They were looking at me even in the game, cucumber. You know, like, and because they never knew me. You know?
Yeah, that's funny. Sorry, the tippers kicking
in. That's all right. No, look. I said it. Right?
Yeah.
That's but brilliant. Anyway, even in the game, you know, like the players were really looking at me and they were trying to figure out because I was really, how do you say, not arrogant, but, you know, I was like.
You're confident.
Yeah, really confident. And they thought, you know, we've never heard of this guy. Who's this guy? He's like 20 years old. What the hell's going on? And they could see that I was confident because I was going out my box playing with feet as well when I had to.
Yeah.
And clear, you know, some forward passes and stuff like that. Or there were crosses I'd go out for.
So you're quite ballsy when you're doing it. Yeah. And they picked up on it.
Yeah, looking like that.
Confidence is
and
everything.
Especially Galakos because Galakos had just come a few years before and he was playing for Libyakos. He came from Germany, right?
Yeah.
Left footer. Yeah. Considered one of the... you know, really good strikers that Greece ever had.
Yeah.
Mike Galakos.
And he was for Olympiacos.
Olympiacos. And so he was looking like that. And you could see he, like, sort of, what's going on? He was trying to figure out, you know.
So sort it of sounds like he was...
Trying to see if I had a weak spot or something.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, so you're getting
sussing
a bit of
you out.
Yeah.
For
yeah.
the next time they're
or
playing.
Or they're trying to intimidate you, you know.
Oh, but obviously it didn't work.
No.
You're like a bull.
Not really.
A raging
bull. Yeah, especially in the beginning because probably I had ignorance of danger. Because I was young and I was really enthusiastic about the fact that I'm going to be playing.
Yeah.
So I never, you know, feared or had any knowledge about danger.
Fearless.
I was just in there, you know, to do what I know.
Yeah.
And that's how it was.
So once you got into the team, did you stay there for
yeah, I stayed for a while.
Yep.
And then after about, I don't know, about 6 months maybe or a bit more, unfortunately I had to go to the army. Now that was the thing there back in the day when I was there. Because in the beginning I went as an Australian citizen, but by descent I was Greek, there came a time at some age that I had to either leave, come back to Australia, or do my paperwork and declare to go to the army, because it's mandatory, all right?
Yeah.
So I had to serve the army.
Yeah.
And, you know, back in the day it wasn't that easy as it is today. We had problems with Turkey all the time.
Yeah.
You know, Turkey was sending spy ships out. Once you were in the army, it doesn't matter even for soccer, you couldn't just get exemptions and paperwork to hand out to say, yeah, you can go and do your training and come back in 3 days or 4 days or whatever. And mind you that because I had to be close to Athens, the only way I could be close to Athens is to declare that I want to be in special forces.
Oh, God.
So, you know,
so
either
you
Green Beret or, you know, or Marine. So I was a Marine.
Yeah, right.
So when I went for a Marine, I had to do all the... It was during the summer when we had holidays.
Mm.
I wanted to rest because it was my first 8 months or something that I was playing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, you know, mentally tired as well and I wanted to build up.
Yep.
And then I had to go and do Marine training, you know, getting on ropes and going up and down hills and on ships and all of that stuff.
Wow.
And I hear from people who I know have been in Ithikes Dynames and whatnot that... It's not just the physicality side of it, it's the mental side of it. That's the killer.
Yeah, they wake you up and throw buckets of water on you and stuff like that.
Wow, that's what you copped.
That's what I heard. Yeah. Remember I was telling you about it?
Yeah, definitely. So you could still play, even though you didn't special
forces?
Well,
that's the problem. That, you know, when I started that, because the guys left and then I had to come back after a month to start preseason training with a team, because the facilities were not, you know... It's not like any eating at home and stuff.
Ah, right.
I wouldn't, or if you would eat, and because they had the stuff out in the sun, you would get food poisoning.
What, even for special forces?
Yeah, and stuff like that. So what happens is I started losing weight.
Ah, right.
So I was sort of, you can see even now, I was never really built up. I was muscly and toned, but I was never like, you know, a huge goalkeeper like Schmeichel. for example. I lost about 5 to 6 kilos. Now, when you're 80 kilos playing and you go down to 74 and you're 185 height, that's very light, you know. So the wind can sort of blow you away.
Okay.
And you start feeling weak. And when you start feeling weak, your confidence drops. So then I had to go into pre-season, and then at some stage they brought in some other goalkeeper. And that's the story of my life. Because they bought me from Akrata and they never paid. They only paid, I don't remember how much money they paid, but it was like a very significant amount compared to buying a goalkeeper from another club, professional club, right?
Yeah.
A goalkeeper who's ready to play.
Right.
They so bought me, I wasn't ready to play.
Yeah. So was it professional back then? So you, is that your
Well, it started in 1979.
Okay.
Professional.
So you're getting paid a full-time wage, supposedly. Didn't have to do a second job.
And actually, my first friendlies as a professional was here in Australia.
Oh, really?
Really?
Because I won that championship then, and one of the goalkeepers was playing for the national team. They had to prepare for this Euro 1980.
Mm-hmm.
So here in Australia came the second goalkeeper and me as a youngster, 19 years old. So I played my first friendly in Melbourne.
Wow.
With AEK.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. With Megas Alexandros at the time, which is Heidelberg, I think.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So I played that game. And
what a connection.
Yeah, definitely.
It was
all, it's like a karma thing because it's all connected here in Australia. Back and forth, back and forth.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah. So Special Force, you were there for what, 12 months?
I was there for 26 months because I was punished as well another couple of months because I didn't show up in the, what is it called? When you have to, you go before to do some tests. And for some reason, I didn't get the notification. I didn't go, and you get 2 months jail.
So you went to jail as well.
You don't go to jail, but it's called 2 months jail, but that means 2 months extra on top of your whatever you have to serve.
Wow.
So I did 26 months.
Wow.
So I'd stay inside for 5 days, and then they give me a day off to go and play a game and come back. So apparently my form start dropping.
Yeah.
And, you know, confidence and all that. And then they bought this goalkeeper. He played for a while. And then after a couple of years, they bought another goalkeeper. I'd play a little bit. Then he'd play for a while. So up to about 29 years old, I was really literally playing a bit on and off and just being a reserve goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Now, there are other clubs that are asking for me. But because at the time football was not professional in the sense of, you know, the philosophy and the way it is overseas – being a cold 100% professional, oh, he's not good, sell him to another club. They wouldn't do that there because you're considered a talent coming from your team roots.
Yeah.
They don't want to sell you to another team and then you start playing well there.
Of course. Yeah.
And then the team cops, like the president and the coaches cop the dirt.
Yeah.
Then why did you sell him? Because he's a good goalkeeper or a good player.
Yeah.
So
got rid of
if
him.
You didn't play, you would be hostage in your own team.
Yeah.
You'd have to sit on the bench and shut up.
Wow.
And just train.
Yeah. But all of this is a very far cry from the nickname that we mentioned earlier.
Oh, yeah, Mr. Prodathlima.
Mr. Prodathlima. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about that because you were part of a very
Before I tell
period.
You that, I want to tell you a story because I started off with telling you about the chubby kids and all
yes.
that. So there's an incident. We went to pre-season to Holland.
Mm-hmm.
So we're out in this town outside of the big cities and all that because there's camps there and there's, you know, hotels and facilities that you can train on and do all your pre-season training and that. So at some stage at this town shows up Demis Roussos.
Right?
He had a concert.
Wow.
I don't know if it was lip syncing or not, but he had this concert, right? And we happened to meet as we were walking. We started to
Legend.
Talk. So when I told him my story, because he asked me my name and all that, and I told him, he said, I've heard of you. And I said, well, I've sung a lot about your song, so I don't know, needless to say, what I know about you.
Yeah.
He told me the story that when he was a kid too, he said, you know, because you remember Demis Roussos, when he was
a big
when
guy.
He was healthy, he was
very
a big
well
guy
fed.
With his long beard and his kimono and all that stuff that he used to wear.
That's it.
You know,
he was a picture of
hippie,
health.
The hippie. So he told me that, you know, when I was a kid, I used to play goalkeeper too.
Yeah.
You know why? I had the sandwich in my hand, he said.
Classic.
So, classic. We started laughing, and I remember that incident always.
Yeah.
So I wanted to say that because, look.
That's brilliant.
Demis Roussos at the time is like meeting a big superstar.
Absolutely.
In singing here and having a conversation out of the blue. These times you can't because there's so many security and all that, you can't see these people. Then you could just walk up to them.
The thing that spun me out about Demis Roussos, because I didn't know too much about him, you know, early on, and when I started doing my research, I found out about, you know, the band that he was in, Aphrodite's Child.
Yeah, imagine being playing next to Vangelis.
Exactly. That's where I was going with this.
Wow.
The guy who wrote Chariots of Fire. Yeah. Mm. You know, like, they were in a band together.
Legends.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah, fantastic.
I digress.
That's a good digression.
So, yeah, I knew all that because of my age and I like music, so I'd follow a lot. And I knew all that, and we had a very nice conversation for about 10, 15 minutes, and then he had to go.
Yeah.
We couldn't go to the concert, unfortunately, because we had to go to bed early.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But yeah, so the question was about, you know, going from the army effectively and being down on form to then all of a sudden having this nickname, Mr. Championship, effectively.
Okay, so I'll tell you what happened.
Yeah.
That started in 1988. So towards the end of the season 87-88, because it's half-half year, you start in September, you finish in June. I started playing for a while, and I played well. We managed to go into the UEFA competition, like the Europa League it is today. We qualified for that.
Yep.
I think we came third or something.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, there was a coach that finished his contract and the president that left and sold the shares to another guy who owned Bouzouki. All right, his name is Stratos Gidopoulos. He was the president. Mm-hmm. He used to be a goalkeeper too. He used to play for Orphi.
Right.
Now, he was in the night business.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, you know, the newspaper said that Iak Pigesta Bouzouki, because he bought the shares, you know, and all that.
Yep.
So he managed to bring Dusan Bajevic as a coach, who was my teammate when I was younger.
Right.
Starting at the age of 20, he was my teammate. So he knew me. But that doesn't mean anything. Mm. He knew me and he knew Stelios Manolas. We were the only two that came from that generation playing with him as teammates.
Right.
He left after. He went and played a couple of years in Yugoslavia. Then he became a coach over there, and then they brought him over here because he knew about the Greek. He knew how to speak Greek.
Yep.
He knew about the Greek, you know.
Greek league system.
All that, you know, the teams and the mentality as well.
Yeah.
And it was pretty good. So he came in as a coach, right? And we started our preseason. We went to Austria. There was only me and another younger goalkeeper.
Mm.
So usually clubs have three goalkeepers, right?
Yeah.
So we went up there. I started playing really well. And then they brought Adonis Minou from Panathinaikos, who was playing in Panathinaikos the previous year. So again, I felt like, look, now I get a chance to play again. They bring someone else again. So what's going to happen is I'm going to get less chances.
Mm-hmm.
He plays a little bit well or decent. He's going to get the position because they paid money for him.
Yeah.
It's like buying a new studio and still working with the old one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're going to use a new one, right?
Yeah.
So it's the same thing with soccer and back then too.
Yeah.
So, you know, I started feeling uncomfortable, and I told the coach, and he's put me down. He said, look, I can understand your frustration. I know a few things because they've told me previously what's happened. I don't want this to sound like a cliche or you know, that I'm telling you something that you think I'm going to be lying at you.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, I'm going to give you all the same chances. Whoever's the best for me is going to play.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's why he said, I'm telling you, because I don't want you to be frustrated and start kicking the bucket with the milk, if you understand my expression.
Terminology.
So he said, go for it.
Yeah.
And if you're better than him, I don't care if he's a transfer. I don't care how much money they paid for him.
Yeah.
If you play better than him, you will play. So that gave me a bit of a, you know,
like confidence.
Like that bell in Rocky.
Yep.
Yeah.
The bell that hit and he went out and started punching.
Yep.
So the same thing.
Mm.
So we played the friendlies and I actually was really good.
Rocky too.
Rocky, whatever Rocky is. That bell used to go always when he used to switch.
It was Rocky too.
Yeah, anyway.
His wife came out of the coma.
That's right, that one. The wife came out of the coma.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I played well and then he played me and that's it.
Yeah, wow.
And that was history.
And that was 1989.
That was beginning 1988 season, 1989. So September.
Yep.
So we played in the European League as well. I played very well as there.
So tell us about the year. Obviously, you won a few trophies that year for AIK.
Well, yeah, we won. We actually won the league after 10 years
because
it was usually either Panathinaikos or Olympiakos.
Yeah.
The previous one, 1987-88, was won by Larissa. It was the first club from the country that won the title.
Yeah.
So we were second. So we won it that year. I was voted best player of the year. I started playing for the national team as well.
Mm.
Yeah.
And then come the next season, starting with pre-season, there's always a game that's called the Super Cup.
Yep.
And it's a team that's won the league against a team that's won the cup.
Right.
So we played against Panathinaikos and we drew. And then we had penalty shootout. And I saved Kalanzi's penalty and we won the title there as well.
Wow. So, and that's where you got the nickname, what a moment. Mr.
Yeah,
Championship.
Yeah, yeah. From the title, because during the championship, the point system was different than it is today.
Mm.
So instead of three for the win,
yeah,
one for the draw and nil for losing,
yeah,
it was two for the win,
yeah,
one for the draw, nil, okay, for losing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So imagine when you're winning,
yeah,
you're not actually going too far ahead because it's only 2 points.
Yeah.
So if your team that's chasing you or was with you,
yeah,
drew, you'd only have 1 point different,
yeah,
instead of two.
Yeah.
Now, if that happens twice and you have 3 points difference,
yeah,
suddenly it's 4 points different,
yeah,
or six if,
yeah,
they lose.
That's right.
But in that system, we were always close with Olympiacos in Panathinaikos.
Yeah.
So it was an ongoing thing, you know,
close competition
until the end.
Yeah.
We actually played the game, the second last game of the season,
yeah,
against Olympiacos in the Olympic Stadium, 80,000 people.
Yeah.
And we were a point ahead.
Close.
And we played that game and, yeah, we beat them 1-0.
Yeah.
And that's how we won the championship.
Won the league. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So what were
and
the
I saved three penalties that season.
Yeah. Mm.
All three penalties away.
Wow.
The one penalty we played in Kalamaria, Thessaloniki.
Yep.
Mm. We were beating them 1-0. And the 88th minute, the referee calls a penalty. And I saved it. And it was a pretty hard one because it was really well taken,
mm,
and really, you know, strong. So I saved that one and we beat them. The other one was against Heraklis in Thessaloniki. Again, 0-0. 86 minutes, another penalty, I save it.
Mm.
And the other one was against Ethnikor at their home ground.
Mm.
We were beating them 2-1, I think.
Mm.
And then around 75 minutes, they win a penalty. I saved that one too.
So they tried.
They tried, but I didn't let them.
Wow.
So apart from those, I had a few good games as well in total.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's why they gave me that nickname.
Yeah.
How does it sit with you anyway?
I have no complaints.
What do people say to you?
No, like, complaints.
What were people saying to you around that time? Like, it must have been unbelievable to...
Yeah, it's overwhelming feeling. But, you know, I tried to be as discreet as possible,
mm,
and I tried not to mingle too much with people.
Yep.
Also, at the time, because I was playing for the national team,
mm,
that means that every week or every 2 weeks we had a game. I'd play a game on Sunday with AIK, all right? I'd go home, get ready. On Monday, I had to go to the national team.
Wow.
Train on Monday, Tuesday, play a game on Wednesday, come back home Thursday, Friday, Saturday go with the team again for the next game.
Mm.
So I was mostly in the hotel.
Yeah,
yeah,
right.
With AIK or in the national team.
Yeah. So my understanding was you were the talk of the town, talk of Greece that time.
I was, but unfortunately you wouldn't get that big of a promotion because there was no free TV at the time. There was only two channels.
Yep. Yeah.
And there was no magazines or, you know, there was not much of that.
But you did
towards
win awards.
Towards the end, there was.
I understand you won a couple of awards that year as well.
Yeah,
do you want to explain that, what those awards were?
Well, the award of being the best player of the league. So there was a meeting in the Holiday Inn Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
So all the presidents came and members of the press and all that. And the players that were awarded. There was the first score award, which was Thomas Mavros.
Yeah.
He who was gone at Panionios at the time, he was finishing his career.
Yep.
He started in Panionios.
Mm-hmm.
He came to AIK and made his big career.
Yep.
And then the last 2 or 3 years, I think, of his career, he went back to Panionios. He actually won the first scorer.
Wow. Okay.
So we met there as teammates for so long. We used to hang out together as well. I've even got photos with him on a motorbike.
Yeah.
You know, with shorts and stuff. Like,
wow.
Going to the beach or something.
That might have been a huge honour, getting voted best Greek soccer player by your colleagues and by the media.
Yeah, and actually, you know, the vote was like my team couldn't vote for a teammate.
Yeah, right.
They had to vote for someone else from another team. And the same with all the rest
peers.
Of the teams.
Yeah.
So my team would vote, I think, for Sarabakos, for Panathinaikos.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the teams would vote for whatever. And I got...
That's
I
amazing.
Got very, like, second was half the points that I got.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I was...
What a year.
So it was unanimous, really.
Yeah, unanimous recognition.
And then there was another sporting award, which you got third.
Yeah,
I
got third. I got
after
third. Nikos Galis was number one, who was, you know, exceptional. He was, he was crazy. He was like Michael Jordan in Greece.
Yeah,
it's
huge.
Yeah, and then, you know, the athletes that were in the classic, you know, track and field, like...
Thano.
Yeah, Thano.
Yeah.
She was pretty good then, too. Yeah, and I got third,
third.
And I, you know, you wouldn't usually get in the top five positions, you wouldn't usually get a soccer player.
Yeah.
You would get all the rest of the sports, you know.
All the individual athletes.
That's right.
Yeah.
Wow, what a year.
Yeah, it was a great year.
And then you made the national team for the first time in 89?
No, I made the national team in 1984.
Oh, 84.
Yeah,
okay.
When that coach who left AIK in 1981, Papa Postolu, became the coach of the national team.
Yep. Mm.
And there was a friendly we played in East Germany.
Oh, yes. Right.
So I had to go there with the team.
Yeah.
And actually, it's funny because my passport had expired, so the rest of the team left.
Yeah.
And I had to rush to go to the embassy and do the passport.
Really?
And then fly the next day by myself through Budapest.
Yeah.
And somebody picked me up at the airport at Berlin.
Australian passport or Greek passport?
No, Greek passport.
Greek passport, okay.
And I had to use a Greek passport.
Yeah.
So then he'd drive me an hour and a half outside in, I think it was Karl Marx Stud. That's his...
Karl Marx
is a city outside of Berlin, because that's a time where Eastern we had the Block. Wall and all that stuff, you know.
So what year was it? 84.
And I played half of the game there.
Yeah. And what was that crowd like? That would have been...
Oh, not really loud.
A bit more passive?
No, they were... It was a friendly game. It wasn't really...
Didn't mean much.
We drew, I think, 1-1, something like that. Mm. Yeah. It was a good result.
Effort. Yeah.
Because back in the day, those Eastern side...
It says here it was 1-0 to East Germany.
Oh, 1-0 maybe, yeah. So,
there you go.
So, yeah, goal here or there, Tom.
So, anyway, so...
Yanis Yannakis.
Yeah. So the thing is that, the teams back then, they were really... It's not like today.
Yeah.
You know, because you had West Germany, but East Germany was equally strong.
Yeah, definitely.
Then you had teams like Poland or Romania or the United Yugoslavia.
Yeah.
They were really hard to beat, mate. They were really great teams. Individual teams, like, you know, club-wise or the national team, they were crazy.
And this is when, as you said earlier, this is when European football was European.
That's right.
This is pre a lot of the African players and the Asian players and all that sort of thing.
I remember there was a thing about the players that came from other countries that were Greek.
Yep.
For example, we had Patikas, Jim, who was Aussie-Greek.
Yep.
And we had Frank Kloppas, who was American Greek. So they couldn't play them both.
Yeah.
But they were allowed to play either two then or three, because that was in early 90s or mid 90s. They were allowed to play two or three foreign players and one homogeneous leader. I don't know how you say that in English.
Mm.
So one of those players. And if they wanted to,
play
Kloppas, Jim had to come out. For him to fill his position.
Oh, right.
You're not allowed to have two of those players on the field.
Wow, okay.
And, you know, that was a great thing, because that kept your national school...
Yeah.
National.
Alive, national, you know.
Yeah.
Now, these days, you see France, okay, I know they were conquerors and all that, but you see, like, 10 black players.
Yeah.
I'm not racist or whatever, but I'm just saying that French... Traditionally, were not black.
Well, what was that thing that came out during the World Cup? It was like... you know, that Africa really won the world. We're talking about the
previous
World Cup.
That's right, because But look, I have to point out, though, here, that it's not France's fault. Because I have read an interview by Mbappé's father, who said that they went, I think he's Cameroon or something, I'm not sure which country it is. Mm-hmm. He went to the federation there, and they asked for a ridiculous amount of money for him to sign to become... the African player to be able to play in the national team later.
Yeah.
And he said, I didn't have that kind of money. And when I, approached the French Federation, they said, for free, bring him in.
Yeah.
So you can't really blame France for that.
Of course not.
Yeah. You know, because there's a lot of, especially in Africa or places where poor places, there's a lot of monkey business going behind the scenes, and a lot of black market and stuff.
Course.
Yeah. So
his
in
dad
a way,
was Cameroon.
That were, Cameroon, that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, and his mum was from Algeria.
Yeah.
You reckon they're kicking themselves?
Cameroon or Algeria? Algeria's got a French connection, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Mm. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, don't forget that Zinedine Zidane is from
Algeria.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
I'll have a little bit more.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah, well,
mate,
I don't know if I'm talking too much.
No, you're doing well, mate. It's interesting stuff.
There you go.
I just wanted to touch on... So we talked about how passionate the Greek crowd is.
Oh, yeah.
I'm assuming the... Just a little bit, mate.
Good stuff.
Just a little bit about on the coaches now. So I'm sure you'd have had some really passionate coaches.
Well, especially the Greek ones, but, usually the big clubs...
Yeah.
Usually would use, especially after, 1978, I'd say, 1979, especially yep. after that, they started using a lot of imported, especially, you know, like German, yep. Austrian, Spanish, yeah. a lot of them.
Wow.
So I had a lot of foreign. The only Greek I really had was Miltos Papapostolou. And then at some stage in the mid-80s, for a bit of time, we had Kostas Nestoridis with one of the other Greek boys that were together.
Yeah.
Just for a little period of time until they found,
yeah.
you know, the foreign coach. So you had a lot of foreign coaches.
So I'm assuming there would be a huge difference in the change rooms at, say, halftime if you're a goal down. Would you get many massive sprays from the Greek coaches, or were the foreigners just as bad? Give us some examples.
Wouldn't say that the foreigners is that bad. I think the Greek ones, yeah. And we had also at some stage, we had Nikos Alefados as well, who was well known for him to be, you know, like exploding type of guy.
So tell us some examples.
He was
of
a
that.
Lot of. Do you say prejudice when somebody believes in black cats and stuff like that? How do you say it?
Superstitious.
Superstitious.
That's
superstitious.
Yeah.
He once was in a team and they were going with the bus.
Yeah.
And a black cat passed in front and said to the bus driver, "Reverse, take the other street."
Wow.
Because he was so superstitious.
Really?
He used to always wear the same T-shirt at the game.
Yeah.
Let's just say I'm wearing this.
Yep. Yeah.
Every game, as a coach, I would
wear
this.
The same.
Nothing else.
So that's an arostia at that point.
Well, you know. And then he
did
was
it
very,
work for
he
him?
Was very explosive, you know, yeah. and, you know, very passionate.
Can you give us some... I'll put a scenario. So you're down 1-0, a game you should be winning. You go in at halftime. You're coming in, you're sucking in the big ones, having water, I'm assuming.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you have oranges at halftime?
You have electrolytes.
Electrolytes, yeah. Okay. Well, maybe that's under fives, Tom.
Yeah. Oranges. The oranges, yeah.
Yeah, electrolytes.
And you sit in the chain, and you all sit down, you sit in your positions.
Yeah, it's quiet.
And then what happens?
Unless there's a bit of a quarrel between a couple of players because of some sort of...
Wow, does that happen?
Oh, it happens, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, look, don't forget that everything's in line, yeah. you know. Everything's...
So is there a lot of blaming? Oh, you should have done that, or you should have done this.
Yeah, that too. But you know, the coaches more, especially the Greek ones.
Yeah, yeah.
That so would be more.
Is there
aggressive.
Any falhadas thrown around in the change room?
No, not in professional level.
Okay,
it wouldn't happen.
I've seen a baseball bat go through a wall in a first grade game.
Yeah,
well, I was outside the dressing room at the time.
But. Well, there's a famous story about I think it was Alex Ferguson at United. Supposedly he kicked
kicked the boot and it hit
Beckham in the head.
Beckham in the eye.
But that's what they say. It was a boot. But
who knows? Well, Beckham says the same, so he's supporting the story. Well,
there you go.
Yeah.
You never know.
Were anything like that in your experience?
Not really. The only thing I do remember is that. Almost there was a fight between Alefados and Mavros because at the time Mavros was playing, but the team wasn't going well.
Right? Yeah, usually.
And when the team doesn't go well and you got an attacker, like, for example, Ronaldo,
yeah.
if he's not being fed, he cannot do everything for you.
Yeah.
Because he's got two players on his neck.
Yeah.
And it's hard to receive the ball without being hassled by one or two defenders,
yeah.
then trying to control it, turn around and try to dribble and score as well.
Mm.
You can't do all that. It's not easy.
Yeah.
So he went against Mavro, and in the second half he pulled him off.
All right.
And Mavro was never pulled off. It doesn't matter how bad he was playing, if he was playing bad.
Yeah.
Because he's one of those players that can really turn around quickly,
yeah.
shoot and score a goal
yeah.
at any minute.
Yeah.
That's how massive, talented, and determined he was. I know him well because we used to sleep in the same room with when we'd go to the hotel with the team.
Yeah.
So I was with him, and I know his mentality.
Mm.
All right, you can see it. You know.
Yeah.
So he pulls him out, and then the whole Yipedo starts shouting his name.
Really.
And the coach got the shits, and he went out of the bunker, and he started, you know, having fights with the fans.
Really?
Oh, you should, chant for Ajax and not for Mavro because Ajax's the team, Mavro's not the team.
Yeah.
And in the end, what happened? They sacked him.
Oh, really?
And Mavro had to leave, and he went to Panionio.
Really?
And the funny thing is, the next year, Alefados has gone to PAOK as a coach, and Mavro went to Panionio as a player. Scored him 3 goals. Karma is a bitch, isn't it?
Yeah. Very way to get back to someone, isn't it?
That's why there's a Greek ad. They add this. There's an ad about a chewing gum.
Yep.
And somebody says something stupid, like the one you have here, and says, "Oh, did somebody say KFC?"
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So something like that, and the ad goes, "It's better to chew than to talk."
Yeah.
So they show the tzikla. Kalitera na masas para na milas.
Yeah.
You know?
Classic.
So that's the thing, you know?
Yeah. Wow.
Now that you said Alex Ferguson, though, I have to pull out a joke.
Go on.
All right. So there's this Greek sports sort of show.
Yeah.
And one of the sportscasters is Sotiropoulos, is one of the biggest ones. That apparently he was doing this game where anybody could call on the radio and ask him a question. And if he didn't know it, they would win something, a prize. Because this guy apparently was like Google at the time, right?
I might have seen this on YouTube.
There was no internet.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he had this TV
for this huge TV for a gift. If somebody would call, ask a question, and he wouldn't know the answer.
Mm. Yeah.
So he was answering to all the questions, and nobody would win the TV.
Yeah.
So he gets the last call. He says, "This is the last call."
Yeah.
And this guy calls and he says, "Look," like that. Yeah. "Look, anything I ask you, I know you're going to know.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask any question I want." So he started laughing.
Yeah.
And he thought, all right, let's give it a go. So he says, all right, give me your question.
Yeah.
And he says, "What brand of chewing gum does Alex Ferguson chew?"
Wow.
It's Ciclo Marseille or Ferguson.
You know? Classic.
So he said, "I don't know, you win the TV."
There you go.
That's a joke just because you said about Ferguson.
He could have just made it up.
Just to give you know, the... Yeah. Oh, I don't concept. Know, but it was live on the radio. You could hear it.
Yeah,
I've got to ask you now. In a similar vein, you've obviously seen Taki Tsoukalas' show,
Olivia Costa.
What do you think of that? I mean, it's hilarious. It's the most hilarious thing I've ever seen on TV.
Look, he's obviously biased,
of course,
because he's an Olympiaco.
Yeah,
and some of the things he says is not right, but you know, you got to give it to him because it's really funny. And you know what? I enjoy the other guy.
Because the other guy,
when he does a boom boom or whatever he says, it just turns around and starts laughing like that, says nothing, and you can see the expression on his face. It's hilarious. When he falls off the chair.
Yeah.
That's the funny one.
Imagine having a show like that here. Seriously.
It'd never
get on.
No, it'd be nuts.
Who would do that?
It'd get banned.
Probably. Because they use language as well.
It's unbelievable. Yeah,
profanity.
Anyway.
So what was the year you had most caps for Greece? Remember, was it 89?
That was 89-90.
Okay.
Yeah, those 2 years.
Tell us some of those games, and what were they for qualifiers?
Okay, now one of the games I had, which was a friendly, was one of the games that I consider my highlight as who I wanted to play against.
Was it against England?
It was against England.
Yep.
Lineker?
So, no, Lineker was not playing, but Peter Shilton was playing.
Mm.
And Gordon Banks was my favourite keeper back in the day, although he wasn't playing for Manchester United.
Mm.
And then later on, Peter Shilton was one of my favourites. Mm. That was before the time that they started importing goalkeepers.
Right.
These are the classic, you know, Ray Clemens for Liverpool. He was also an exception goalkeeper. Sure. Because I was a goalkeeper from a young age, I used to appreciate the goalkeepers even though they would play for Liverpool or some other team. Doesn't matter. You know, like David Seaman, who played for Tottenham, Arsenal,
England goalkeeper.
English goalkeeper too. So I had the privilege of playing, first of all, against Peter Shilton.
Yeah.
And we took photos together. I have photos at home, not here in Greece, where we're like this together.
Wow.
He was like 41 at the time or something.
Wow.
He played his last, I think, World Cup in Italy then.
Mm.
41, 42 years old, something like that.
So this is someone that you would have watched as a kid or
almost? Of course.
Wow.
And then I played against players like, for example, John Barnes, who was playing for Liverpool. You know, remember the dark player, John Barnes? He scored one of the goals.
Yeah.
And then Robson for United. He scored the other goal. So you're playing against these players now, right?
So Robson's got a statue at Old Trafford.
Yeah,
of
that's
him.
Right. Against him.
You played against them.
Yeah.
So you'd watch these guys coming at you.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow.
And you know what you're facing, right? You know what you're facing. So for me, even though it was just a friendly and it wasn't, you know, one of those games that you play for a qualification or whatever, for me that was the highlight of my career as a national player.
And what was the score in that game?
We lost 2-1.
2-1.
We actually scored first.
Really?
Mm. We scored first with Saravako. He won a penalty and like in the first minutes, in the opening.
Yeah.
And then Barnes equalised in the first half. He had this free kick.
Yeah.
He kicked the ball over the wall.
Mm-hmm.
I dive for it.
Yeah.
I save it. The ball, as I'm in the air, hits the post, hits my back and goes in.
Oh,
so I was a bit unlucky there.
Mm.
And then the second goal was a strike from 16-yard box from Robson. It went where you can't catch it.
What would it be like? I can't even imagine what it would be like. You're watching these missiles come at you.
Oh, yeah. First of all, you can feel the presence of them.
Mm.
And that is something I want to point out with the national team of Greece that made it through the Euro.
Yeah.
and won the Euro.
Yep. Yep.
Now, the huge difference between that team and all the previous teams, I can tell you something, some of the previous teams, the amount of talent and personality that was on those teams were much better than the team that actually won the Euro. But what the huge difference was that a lot of the players in that Euro that we won were actually playing for sometimes in European teams, which meant that, for example, one of the players was Totti's teammate. Playing with Totti, who's a legend for Roma,
yeah,
you're training with him every day. Mm. So after the first starstruck that you have, after about a month, you feel equal because you're training with him every day.
Yeah.
So you can test him, he can test you, you can go against him, then you're playing in the same team.
Yep.
So when you are now playing in your national team against him, you don't feel that...
There's no awestruck
feeling. Yep. Like the team that played in the World Cup and played against Maradona. Manola was telling me that they had shit their pants. When they were looking at him.
Yeah.
And he had that looking like a devil because I don't know if he was under
coke or something,
whatever.
Yeah.
But he had that look that he's going to destroy you. Yeah. And he did. They beat us 4-0. He scored one or two goals. I don't remember.
Smashed them.
So, you know, so that team had that privilege. A lot of players were playing in Dynamo Moscow. They were playing in Portugal. They were playing in England. Yeah. They were playing in Italy. Mm. So when they came as a team, they did have, like, a good team too. I'm not saying that they weren't talented. Of course they were. Mm. But because the market opened up and Europe was looking for talent with less money, okay, the doors opened up for the Greeks.
Yeah.
Because now I can have more than two players, foreign players in my team. So let's try them. But before, when you had only two players, you would go for the market that was guaranteed to bring you talent.
Sure.
You wouldn't go for the Greeks because they were known as undisciplined. So you wouldn't get a Greek.
Yeah.
And that way, I remember the first player who went overseas was Anastopoulos. He went to Avellino. And it was such a big thing. And Avellino was a team that just came up from second division in Italy.
Yeah.
He played a couple of cup games and scored. He went well. And then after, he didn't do much. And that was it. But these players had a good career at the time.
Yeah.
Say, Darides was playing for Dinamo Moscow.
Yep.
You know, and you know, Karagounis and everybody. So they blended together. We were lucky as well. We were lucky because the teams we played against, a lot of players were playing in the Champions League, especially France. So they were playing with the English teams that were competing to the end of the Champions League at the time, all right? These players were really killed. They had played 80 games or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, so they were really, you know, they were struggling to walk, I suppose.
Yeah.
So we were fresh,
yep.
More fresh, and we had the ambition.
Yep.
We had a German coach for the first time,
yep.
Like a foreign coach for the national team. He was pretty good at giving the players a good psychology and all that and believing in themselves. You had a bit of luck as well. You didn't lose more than 2-1 against Russia, which passed you through the next round.
Yeah.
And the rest is history. Definitely. You played against Portugal in the opening game where there was a lot of anxiety for them.
Yeah.
Ronaldo was 17 at the time, 17 and a half.
Yeah.
They lost that game and then you play the final against them again.
Yeah.
And they have the anxiety for them from the first game and lose the second game as well. That's how you win it. So timing and a few things play a very big role.
So many things need to line up to be able to win a premiership.
That's right.
And in this instance, everything that you've just spoken about, all of those, the stars absolutely align for us.
And you can see it in any major sport, especially in sports that are with teams.
Yeah.
You know, for example, you know, Michael Jordan only won 6 in a 19-year career. He should have won much more.
Exactly. Yeah.
But it's so hard to win,
yeah,
which makes a difference.
A lot of it's got to get down to the coach as well. You could have a great, talented team, but you need a coach to harness and get them together. Look, which brings me to my next point I want to talk to you about. There's a famous coach out there at the moment. You know, he's one of the best coaches in the Premier League at the moment. He was born not too far from near Philadelphia. Have you got much to do with Ange Postecoglou?
I don't personally know him.
Because his dad was a massive AIK fan growing up.
I don't know him personally, but I do know him from here when he was coaching here and he left to go to Japan. So I followed the story a little bit.
Yeah.
Now, if when I came here I started going to have a higher level of goalkeeping coach license, maybe we would have met. But because I know that here also there's a sort of a lobby, and when I came here I was 55 and now I'm 64.
Yeah.
So I got the license 4 years ago. you can't really make a big career of a coach when you're over 60.
Mm. Right. So what do you think it is with Ange?
I didn't get to meet him. What I know and what is I think is going to work for him is that he was in a league where the teams do not have closets full of money.
Mm.
So he had to find and do the actual scouting to find the players that have the talent.
Yeah.
And he's good at that. So that might help him.
Mm.
Now he's got the money too.
Yeah. Right. But it just seems...
And he went well in the... Was it Scotland?
Yeah, yeah, Scotland.
Celtic.
He went well for Celtic.
Yokohama.
Too.
Even here.
Yeah.
He won it with Melbourne. He won it with Brisbane.
That obviously shows you a continuation.
Even Australia. He got us our first Asia Cup as well.
Oh, I remember the Asia Cup too.
Yeah. So what do you think it is with him? So it's obviously he's got some formula right. He's doing something well.
Yeah. He's Greek. And,
apart from that, that's the obvious one, Tom.
After a couple of ouzos or whatever you call them.
Because at the moment, he's the talk of the town in the Premier League.
He is.
He's got Tottenham up there.
Rightfully so.
You know,
the only thing I'm worried about Tottenham is the owner. Now, you can see even today, I know he's trying to justify his position and he's all that, but you can't come out and say that although Mourinho and Conte are great coaches, they were not for our team and it was a mistake that we hired them. Whether you like Mourinho or not, there's sometimes where I like him and sometimes where I hate him. He's proven himself.
Mm-hmm.
Whether he was lucky, he wasn't lucky, blah, 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 whatever you want to say, he has proven to be one of the top coaches. Now, his style might be out of fashion now because he plays that old, you know, defensive or park the bus or whatever you want to say, but he got results.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay. And I think he's right when he said that that Levy stopped him from winning that cup.
Mm.
Or what, European Cup, was it?
Yep. Yeah.
Because he got kicked out before. They didn't give him the opportunity to.
Yeah. But so, the feeling I get, Ange doesn't care what anyone thinks. He's got everyone on board.
I think
the players, the crowd, it's just something about him, some aura about him. And again, it's not a fluke. He's done this so many times. He did it with Yokohama.
I think, first of all, he's humble.
Yes.
100%.
Definitely.
Okay. But second, he knows what he's doing. And I feel that the players... and the crowd have that sense that he does know what he's doing.
Yeah.
You know, so that gives the whole club, gives them a confidence. Given also that Harry Kane left, that's another thing. You've got to take under consideration. Yeah, Kane has been there for years.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was the fear of the opponents because he was the number one big gun.
Yeah. Well,
then you got Son and the rest, but he was the number one.
Yeah.
And combination with Son, they did some unbelievable things.
But there's something about him. He demands he says the change room is for the players, but there's some aura about him that players, everyone respects him, even Levy, the crowd.
Well, he does have a background also now. He's not someone who just came from Australia. Step by step by step, success.
Yeah.
Japan, they're pretty competitive over there too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
For me, even Saudi Arabia now, that there was a lot of talk about Ronaldo going over there, you know. I watched the games.
Yeah.
It's not easy.
Yeah.
They have talent and they have strong players too.
Yeah.
It's definitely not easy. And the way that's going on, because there's a lot of money, obviously, they can buy themselves what they want.
Well, the standard of the football across the board, I think, is improving. I mean, you see Inter Miami buying Messi, for example. You got Ronaldo going to Saudi Arabia.
Do you know the story behind that, right? Because Inter Miami didn't pay
The
whole fee. There was a meeting between all the clubs, the MLS.
Yep.
American League.
Major League Soccer.
And they all pay money to bring Messi.
Is that right? Okay.
All the because that's America.
Mm.
You know, for me, that was the smartest move for Messi to do is go to the United States.
Yeah.
Because he's a good player. He's got his fame.
Yep.
And he's going to attract a lot of people. Now, don't get me wrong, but, you know, first game, Serena Williams is there.
Mm.
LeBron James is there. You think they went to see Messi?
Mm. No.
They went to promote themselves.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right? And see Messi.
Yeah.
Mm. Messi knows that. He knows that he's going to track the big names and all that.
Yeah.
So what is that? An extra plus.
Yep.
Then he's going to score a free kick or whatever. He knows what he's doing.
He'll get coverage.
He'll do it. For me, Messi now is playing an easier league than Ronaldo is.
Yeah. Mm.
That's what. Not because Ronaldo played for United, and obviously I would support Ronaldo more, But I acknowledge what Messi is too.
Mm.
But I think that it was one of the smartest moves that Messi could do.
Yeah.
Mm. And I'm not talking that, you know, United States is close to Argentina. I can pop in and go to...
Well, it's the biggest sporting market in the world.
Yeah. Like, it's the biggest economy in the world.
Marketing started from the United States.
Yeah.
You want to promote anything, that's where you go.
Yeah.
Well, that's where the money is.
So he knew that. So with Angie, that's what I believe. I believe that he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
If he has the full support and he doesn't get any... I don't know how you say it, you know, like tackles or...
Yeah.
And he's got a bit of luck because you need that too.
Right? Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But he's got a good aura about him. But I did hear, you might have told me this, he wanted to coach AEK one day, but his main goal is...
He said that.
He did say that.
He wants to coach Greece because I want to live on a Greek island and coach the Greek national team.
Well, why not?
Yeah. How good would that be?
I don't know how good it would be for Angie, but I know it would be good for Greece. Because you know, over there, there's a different story. You remember they kicked Ranieri out?
Mm.
Ranieri, Italian coach, right?
Yep.
He was the coach of the Greek national team.
Yep.
Mm. So they kicked him out of the team because they thought that he didn't know what he was doing. He goes to Leicester and he wins the championship next year.
Mm.
Things over there, there's a lot of politics in Greece too.
Yeah, definitely.
So, you know,
in Greece? No.
No, never is.
Let's talk a little bit about the quality of Greek football now. Where do you think Greek football currently sits in terms of the national competition, the Greek Super League, going into the national team? Has it improved over the years? Has it diminished?
Look, in general, whenever we talk about something, in general, progress is always there.
Mm.
Because a lot of elements go into football, and for example, number one is science.
Mm.
All right. Now, when I started playing football and I was a kid, I remember they used to encourage us to just be good at school and concentrate on your training and that.
Mm.
And give your efforts, your big efforts in training, because that's where you'll become better.
Mm.
Now, later on, when technology and when science came into the sport, they started realizing that if someone's very good at school, therefore very smart, they're much better in playing football because they're smarter, more intelligent.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's changed now.
Yeah.
Now clubs want you to finish school.
Yes.
And be good at it, and then your football will become better because you're smarter, more intelligent, quicker, everything.
Mm.
So that's just one element that I mentioned now that plays a huge difference between back then, now.
Mm.
Another thing is there's a lot of money put into the sport, which comes from sponsorships. When there's money, there's more facilities, there's more comfort for the players.
Yep.
Players have been treated like kings.
Mm.
Back in the day, players were considered τα λιτάκια που ήρθαν από το χωριό, which means the hillbillies, or whatever you want to call them, the bums that come from and happen to be good at soccer, playing, kicking a ball.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So there was a completely different concept and, you know, appreciation or whatever, or about someone who was playing football then and playing football now. This also is a bit of a boomerang because now players are considered like world class and some of them are really flops. And I'll give you an idea, an example. Mm. Pogba, he came to Manchester United. He was paid like a king.
Yep.
He hardly ever played because he was always injured. And when he did play, he was so arrogant that they had to kick him back to take him to Juventus again. And now they can't sell him. Because nobody wants to get him. They know him.
Mm.
So a lot of players get, they're overrated.
Mm.
And this happens because it depends on who you have as a manager.
Sure.
Because 100%. As soon as the management came in, a whole different ballgame.
Mm.
A lot of money, managers making a lot of money. So there's a lot of promotion. Also, social media has helped a lot. You see these players now that social media is more interested in their haircuts and their beards and who they have as a girlfriend.
Yeah.
See, everybody now has a famous girlfriend.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Handbag.
And it's usually trouble.
Yeah.
It doesn't let them concentrate.
Mm.
You know? It's different to have someone who's a simple girl and it's different to have, for example, Shakira.
Mm. Yeah.
Or I don't know who that you hardly ever see. They're in concerts over the world. Yeah. You have to concentrate. How do you do that?
Mm. Yeah.
It's not easy. So all these things, yes, have helped, but also have created problems as well. And it usually is, you know, when things boom like that, there's always going to be the pros and the cons.
Yeah.
But in Greece, as I said, because a lot of players start playing in Europe, because a lot of foreign players come in as well, and you get players, good quality players that come to Greece that are from abroad, that help you become better as well in your training sessions, in the everyday thing.
Yeah.
Do you know much about the owner of AEK, Dimitris?
Yes, I had him as a president when I was there my last 3 or 4 years.
Mm.
He came in with another guy, Yanis Karas.
Mm-hmm.
They were together.
Yeah.
Now, the history behind Dimitris Melisandidis is that he started off as an owner of a driver's license company that he had. And then he became very good friends with Yanis Karas, who was in the petrol business.
Right.
And then he started to build on that, and now he's become huge in the petrol business. He's you know, making deals with the United States and stuff like that. And if it wasn't for him, the team owed a lot of money.
Mm.
So we had to go through the process because there was a law that said that if the team goes down two categories to third division, the biggest percentage of the money that they owe will be wiped out.
Really?
Yeah. And you can open up a new, let's say, ABN number.
Yep.
Under another ABN number and start the new process from the beginning.
Yep.
And that's what happened to AEK. So then we went to third division. I remember watching games in third division and second division.
Yeah, really.
They went up to first division. Now, what he's very capable of, because he's a very strong personality, what he's very capable of is that he will not throw the money away.
Mm.
He's very tight at spending. But what he promises, you get it on the day that he promises.
Yeah.
So if you get paid your wages and your wages on the 30th of a month, every 30th of a month, everybody in the club is paid.
Mm.
He will be tight. He will try to, you know, sort of... Because I had a negotiation with him with my contract too.
Yeah.
Mm. The last contract I did for the last 2 years.
Mm.
And, you know, I knew it and I didn't... although I wasn't playing... Again, I could go a little bit higher, but I didn't because I know that he would kick.
Mm.
And I was at the end of my career and I wanted to finish at the club. So when I told him, he gave me his hand and that's it. And I get my money every time that the money would had to go in my bank account. So, and he's a very strong character, you know. He's in the market.
Yeah.
He knows. Mm. He knows the ins and outs and all that. He's made his mistakes as well.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he hasn't. Because when you got the hot potato in your hand, you're juggling it, you're going to make mistakes. Yeah. But in general, he's been... And, you know, we would never, ever, after what happened with our home ground that was knocked down because of a political promise, we would never get it back.
Yeah.
He had to fight everybody to do it.
That stadium, how awesome is it? Seriously.
It's been voted the best stadium in 2023 in the world.
Yeah. I did get voted.
And that's why the...
Rightfully.
I'm assuming you've been there?
No, I haven't been there.
You haven't been there yet?
No, okay. I haven't been there yet. We're planning on going next year with my wife. Mm. I haven't been there yet, but it's a beautiful stadium. I've seen...
Yeah.
I saw the whole show, you know.
Yeah.
They had the old players come in. I would have been one of the players to come in.
Yep.
Yeah.
In that presentation when they opened, when they did the opening of the ground.
Mm.
And they have been awarded the Europa Conference League final.
Fantastic.
For this year, for 2024. Wow. In the four corners of the stadium, they have four big columns.
Yep.
They have four photos on.
Yes.
So one is Nestorides, the other one is Serafidis,
yeah.
the other one is Tomas Mavros, and the other one is Mimis Papayanu. So they're legends.
Big, big names.
I did read a publication, I'm not sure which one it was, but they had you in the AEK Team of the Century. They had a squad of 25 and your name was there.
Well, I was voted number five of goalkeepers. Of the 80s.
Okay. Mm.
So they did this survey and they had, the, you know, five best goalkeepers, five best right backs, five left
And you were in the top five.
I was in the top five goalkeepers. I was number four or five. I don't remember, number four or five. And also, back in the day, like when I was playing, I remember my cousins here would call me from Australia because they had the play, was it PlayStation or the football, whatever it was?
Yeah,
FIFA. And I was the goalkeeper.
There you go.
And because these guys were Olympiacos, they would call me and say, we scored 3 goals yesterday.
Classic.
And, you know, they'd make fun.
Did it look like you?
Yeah.
Classic.
So see, I was in one of those as well. So
Yeah.
Good start.
Do you still have much to do with the club now?
I have friends in the club.
Yeah.
I do talk and older teammates, but because of the distance and the time difference and all that, it's not that easy. When I was living in Greece, I would go with my wife, we'd go watch games and all that. That was in the Olympic Stadium then.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And gather with the boys, have dinner every 2-3 months maybe, whatever.
Yeah.
And I have some teammates that from abroad as well that we still talk to today. And if when we go back, obviously I'm going to be involved in something, I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Well, yeah. We can't wait to see.
Exactly.
Well, I'll be in the museum. Yes. Yeah. Some when the museum opens up in the ground, there's going to be some sort of, you know.
Well, in the next 6 months, it's actually going to be 100 years for AIC.
That's right.
It's April 2024.
I was there when it was the 90 years.
Mm, okay.
And a book came out, and I'm in that book as well.
Yeah, wow.
So I know the reporter who is the head of the whole team that organises all the Wikipedia in it and all the photos and all that. So I know him, and he's telling me now that he's running around like crazy to gather all this information and whatever other photos they can find and all that to fix in the 100 years.
Are you going to be involved in any way? Are you going to be there for the 100 years?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so.
I don't know if there's going to be any more photos of me in there because probably the last 10 years are going to add some more maybe photos of the newer players and all that. I'm not sure how it's going to be, but I'll probably get it when it comes out.
Either way, what an honour to be, you know, mentioned among all of those names.
Yeah,
and
especially
part of
a big club like AIC.
Exactly.
AIC has a different sort of approach and mentality to it because AIC came from people that were kicked out of Turkey in very bad times, and they came in the early 20s
it's in the name, isn't it? The K stands for Constantinople.
That's right.
And I believe there was a team in Constantinople. So these
I think
players,
it was Pera Club or whatever it was called.
Yeah.
And these people came and they actually bought the land where the stadium is today, and they actually used their hands to dig and start making the ground and the first sort of stands that were wooden. Mm. And all that.
And
back
is that where Hagia Sophia is
today? Same one. Yeah. Wow. It's owned by the. See, you've got the mother AIC, which is the amateur club, and then you got the professional club, which is paying rent or something. I don't know what the deal is.
Well, it's going to be a great 100 years coming up, and you're part of all that.
Yeah.
Amazing career, Tom. What do you think?
It's a big honour. It's also a big honour to be mentioned and to be around players like. Because I have actually talked and associated and trained with players like Mimis Papayanu, like even Mimis Domazos, who came from Panathinaikos, and Kostas Eleftherakis, who came from Panathinaikos. You know, Dusan Bajevic, Tomas Mavros, Kostas Nestoridis, I didn't because he's older, but he was as a coach.
Yep.
And being around AIC, there's a lot of times that we talked and, you know, and all that and associated. So, you know, it's a privilege and an honour to be around all these legends.
Yeah.
That were playing back in the day and created the whole, you know, sort of new history of AIC. Mm. Yeah.
Well, definitely, mate. And now you're part of the Uzotalk family, mate. I don't know if that's up there with your honours, but.
Oh, no, it's great. It's great.
Somehow I don't think it's going to be quite the same. But, you know, look, at the end of the day, we're just so happy that we were able to get you in here to have this discussion.
I'm very happy too because this is my first time that I'm actually giving an interview in English.
Is that
about Greek soccer and
is
all that?
Right?
It's always in Greece.
Wow.
So it's always in Greek. So this is my first English interview.
Well, we're honoured to have that. Honoured to have you and honoured to be the first.
That's an honour for me too, mate.
No, awesome, mate. Thank you so much, Spittle.
Thank you very much as well, and good luck with whatever you're doing, and hopefully you get, you know, the people you want to. Because this is also a bit educational for people that are interested in whatever you guys are promoting.
Well, I don't know if you know.
It could be music, it could be soccer, it could be, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you know, but we've had some pretty good guests up until... I mean, we had, you know, last year we had Thanasi Polikadroti, the Bouzouki player.
I know him well because he's AIC too.
Legend.
And he wrote the newer anthem of AIC.
The anthem, yes.
Which didn't really go through, but he... Because they use the old one always.
Well, he sat where you're sitting and he played for us.
Yeah.
He did.
He's a great guy.
And the thing is, he wouldn't leave.
Yeah.
We said, oh, play more. We're recording him. And his manager was going mad. He goes, Nick, we've got to go.
He's somewhere.
He's composed some of...
Oh, he's a legend.
Great songs.
Huge. Absolutely.
Great songs for singers.
He was telling us stories about, you know, writing stuff with Barrio.
Yeah, I know.
With Kazadzidi, with all of these things. Like, unbelievable names. And he sat right here and played fucking Bouzouki in this room.
Imagine what he's seen because, you know, the nightlife is completely different to what my life is. My life was, you know, you have to be home at 7 o'clock.
Yeah.
We'll call you or we'll pass by.
Yeah.
That's when I was 16 years old.
Yeah.
When I went to Athens, there were people coming visiting my house to see... Yeah. If I was in or not.
Because
we had a game on Sunday. So, you know, there's a big sacrifice for any kind of professional athlete.
Yeah.
Even amateur athletes that don't 100%. Make it through. There's big sacrifices, you know. You don't have your friends. You don't have a life. And that's why it's tricky sometimes, because when you finish that, you know, it's like falling off through the sky. So you want to start having everything that you didn't have, whether that's bad food, drinks, smokes, girls, going out, whatever, you name it. And it's, you know, it's only natural because you're always reserved and preserved person that has to do this, that way.
Yeah.
All the time.
That was a huge element of disciplinary, which like you got loads of it.
And, you know, some of the, I watched some of the sports today, especially tennis, where, you know, you're on your own.
Yeah. Mm.
There's nobody else to back you. There's no defender. There's no attacker.
Yeah.
You're there with your racket and you have to, every time you have to deliver.
Yeah. You and
I see sometimes that people are harsh against either Maria Sakkari or or Tsitsipas, you know, because they don't win or.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a privilege for them to being in the top 10 anyway.
Yeah. Oh, they're doing great. So, they're doing.
You know, if they don't win Grand Slams, it's just because probably some other players are more talented. That's it.
Yeah.
There's no other. You know, there's no other explanation to that.
Yeah.
They're trying their best. You know.
Yeah.
Look, you can say that Tsitsipas is a little bit. You know, how do you say it in English? Epipoleos ligo. You know, he shouldn't have his father as his coach.
Yeah.
Because his father is not a Grand Slam coach.
Mm.
All right. That's probably a mistake. All right, but. Sakkari, she's tried so much, mate. Yeah. You see her training.
She's an amazing athlete.
Actually, the other day with my wife, she's here.
Yeah.
We were watching the drill she was doing.
Yeah.
And my wife, she's like, well, I got dizzy by just looking 2 minutes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
She's because an amazing athlete.
Amazing.
Yeah. And she even looks it. She's like a supreme
You
know, athlete.
You get people that are easily these days because of social media, but that's in everything.
That's right.
Everybody just writes something because it's free to write.
Yeah.
And you think it's smart. But it's not that way.
No, we definitely support them. We'd love to get them on the show if we could. But,
that'd be great.
Yeah,
great athletes. We saw Tsitsipas. We went last year with my wife. There was this tournament here in Sydney.
Yep.
And we saw the game Tsitsipas against Di Matteo. We saw that game. He beat him. It was Italy, Greece.
Mm. I was there.
Yeah, we were there too.
I was there too.
I've got photos on my phone.
There you go.
And I've got him when he's warming up, and you can see his back with his long hair.
Yeah. Oh,
there you anyway, go. We couldn't get close, but we went and watched the game. We like tennis. We go
brilliant.
And watch.
Yeah. No, good.
And, you know, it's a privilege because Greece is a country that has nothing to do with tennis.
Yeah.
The previous well-known sort of name in tennis in Greece is Maria Sakkari's mother, Kanalopoulou.
Which
I used to watch when I was playing soccer.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
You know, in tournaments. Mm. But she didn't make it really big, but she was playing in some sort of like Acropolis tournament.
Local comps.
Or whatever, but she was good. But she was nothing like a daughter. Her daughter's huge these days.
Yeah.
When you're in top 10, that's a big number.
Oh, that's massive. That's huge. Yeah. No, good on them, mate. We've got some good athletes here in Greece.
Hopefully you will get some here.
Yeah, we do,
Just on that, I mean, we mentioned some of those names, but just to reiterate, former NATO Supreme Allied Commander James Stavridis. We've had comedian Angelo Tsaruha. We've had Mark Burris. We've had...
World champion boxer.
We've had George Kambosos Jr. And now we're proud to say that we now have Spiros Oikonomopoulos as well.
Thank you so much
for being here.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Can I just add something before we go? Because we never mentioned anything about the Matildas.
I just wanted
to say that was a huge, huge step.
Yeah.
And I actually thought that the refereeing against us, especially against when we played France, was not really the refereeing that should for a hometown country that's playing the World Cup. Because as you can remember, they won a corner when the girl who made the cross was 1 meter outside. They won the corner and then they scored the goal. And luckily it was a foul on the defender.
Yeah.
We could have lost that game.
Yeah.
You know, from bad refereeing.
Yeah.
But I want to, you know, give a shout out to the girls as well and the whole staff.
Yeah.
I know that Tony Franken, the ex-legend here in Australia, was goalkeeper coach of the girls.
Mm-hmm.
I recently saw him one of the workshops in, you know, in the Australian Soccer Federation. There's workshops that we attend to get points for our license. And he was in one of the last ones, and he was mentioning a lot going on with Matildas and the preparation for the penalty kicks and all that.
Mm.
So, and I think that the crowd was massive and it was probably a great promotion. But
100%.
I think that the crowd was proud of the just the event.
Yeah.
Just that the fact that the team was attending
yep.
a World Cup. Doesn't matter what the result was.
They outdid the Socceroos.
Yeah.
In terms of interest, yeah. like by every measure, by social media standards, by sale of yeah. the Matildas jersey,
yeah.
By viewership, it was unbelievable. Did you
and
ever
you also
expect
had,
that?
You also had a good level of football playing, not only yeah. by the Matildas, but by other clubs as well. So that helped promote.
Definitely.
And it's very good that it happened.
Mm. Yeah. Agreed.
Well, hopefully it's a good segue for Australia getting the World Cup for men's as well.
Yeah.
In our shows, we can put on great. A good show.
It'd be, so, it'd be pretty
imagine
special.
Imagine having that here.
I think it's a harder thing to do because yeah. the men's level, and especially in European countries, is much bigger.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a tradition, I don't know, hundreds of years now. It's not easy to break. Mm. Even though the level in some countries has fallen because of all the political...
Yep.
stuff that has happened and all the mingling of other people and
yeah
yeah
and you know the falling of the Eastern Bloc from Russia
yeah
Soviet Union and all that mm. some teams were much stronger than today
yeah
and that's why probably Greece has got a bigger chance into getting something better
yeah
in European
definitely
football.
Mm. No. Awesome. Well said, mate. Well done. Gather Matildas.
Absolutely. Yep. All right. Well, Spittle, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
UzoTalk@outlook.com is the email. Send us your messages and follow us on social media at UzoTalk and at Uzo_talk on Instagram. Nick Athanasiou, thank you very much, mate.
Tom, your legend, thank you. And thank you, everyone.
See you guys.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Ακολουθήστε μας στο Soundees, στο Spotify, στο Apple Podcasts και στο Google Podcasts.